Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm here with my sister Julie Dolan in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jewel, how are you today?
Hi, Leanne. I'm okay. I'm sort of in a state of shock. You know, I have one of those calendars where it still said September, and then I didn't realize that it becomes October this week, and I have a doctor's appointment, and I thought I had one more week to
pull
myself all together and, you know, be in my best physical shape before I went in for my physical. But no, I don't. It's this Friday because it's October this week, Leanne.
Okay. I know it is, Julie. I know it is. October 1. This is it. We're in the final countdown for You're the Best. Comes out at the end of the month. We have a lot of special stuff planned for October. We're going to tell you a little bit about that coming up. It is our sister Sheila's birthday today, so we have to wish her a happy birthday. If you're new to Satellite Sisters and trying to keep track, there are five sisters. Two of us usually show up on the Tuesday show. We have more sisters on the weekend show. Our sister Sheila insists she is the middle sister, even though Liz is also the middle sister. But it is Sheila's birthday today. So
happy birthday, Sheila.
Yeah, happy birthday to Sheila. Let's see. We're going to talk. We have a lot to talk about. Usually on Tuesdays, we sort of.
Going deep on shallow topics, Leanne. That has always been our theme, our sort of modus operandi for Tuesday. But we have some big topics we're going to talk about. We have some news about You're the Best.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about that. But then you went to see a movie, right?
I went to see the premiere of He Named Me Malala. It's a new documentary about Malala Yousafzai, the Nobel Prize winner and 17-year-old. And I'm going to tell you about that. There's more news about global education for girls we're going to discuss. The Lean In people, Sheryl Sandberg and her people, just issued a new report along with McKinsey, right, about women in the workplace. We're going to talk about that. We get a lot of questions about that, so we thought we'd follow up. We have a new way to meditate, Julie. You're gonna.
Yes, wait till you hear this, Leanne. It's going to change your life. Okay, you think you're just doing dishes, but no, sister, we've got some. It's going to increase your happiness, your well-being. I'm going to explain it all. It's some new research. Yeah.
All right. And then we have some Facebook follow-up. But all right. First, Julie, I know Liz got to steal the show this weekend. She announced she and Sheila were going to St. Paul. They will be there November 14th, Saturday, November 14th. But Julie, you and I are going to be together in Dallas, Texas, right?
Yes. I'm really excited about this. We're going to be at the Barnes & Noble in Dallas. It's on the corner of Preston and Royal. Very easy to find, easy access, and it's a great Barnes & Noble. We're going to be there December 3rd at noon, Leanne. How about that for a good time? So you don't have to stay out late. You can just swing by and see Leanne and me. And you'll also get to meet my daughter-in-law, Vera, who wrote an essay for the new book. She will be there as well. So it's a 3-for-1 kind of package. I think it's going to be good.
Yes, it's Thursday at noon. And there were a lot of reasons we picked that time. But that's the time we're going with. Vera felt it worked for her friends. We wanted to include them in the You're the Best celebration. The bookstore said that was a great time for them. And we'd like to thank Barnes & Noble. They don't do a lot of events there. So we are super happy to be there at the Preston Royal shopping area. And we hope that people who are working can come by on their lunch hour Thursday at noon, December 3rd. So there you go. I will be putting stuff up on the website, on the Facebook page, if you want more details. But that is it for Texas area people. Thursday, December 3rd at noon. We would love you to come, and we'd love you to bring your satellite sister.
Yes, that will be really fun. Speaking of satellite sisters, you know, all this month until our book launch on October 27th, both at our Satellite Sisters Facebook group page and also on Instagram, we've been asking you to put up pictures of your satellite sisters and, you know, just write a little bit about who they are or why, you know, why you get together. And we started off with a bang, Leanne. You know, we've gotten so many cute pictures on Instagram and Facebook, but this past week it's sort of I feel like we might need, we need a sort of a pep talk right now. We need more pictures, people. We want to see your, we want to see your satellite sisters. Okay. Some of you have said that you don't have a picture of your satellite sisters. Well, I don't want that to stop you. Okay. I do not. I want you to go ahead, put a post up, tell us about your satellite sisters, okay? Because I'm making up the rules of this contest. Okay?
Liz is going to get mad.
I know. Liz is out of the country, okay? She's on a business trip, okay? We just want you to keep putting the pictures up, okay? So someone asked if you already submitted one. Do you have to submit it every week? No, but if you want to put up more pictures, we want to see more pictures. So they are random drawings. We're giving out copies of our book. It's just this month. So come on, people. Let's see some more satellite sisters on our Facebook group and on Instagram. Okay.
All right, Julie, that's a good plea. I'm going to get on it. I have an event Friday night I'm going to tell you about, and I'll be getting some pictures of me and my satellite sisters at that event and putting them up. Yeah, book news. We have December 3rd. We're going to be in Dallas. The Satellite Sisters YTV contest. Keep them coming, people. Keep them coming. I am also working on, in Pasadena, the Satellite Sisters meetup. That would be before the Romans event. I am meeting today at a restaurant. I am trying to organize sort of a cocktail reception.
Whoa.
I know. Well, people are coming. People are coming from out of town. People are driving in. It's LA. They have to drive a long way. So we're looking for something Saturday, November 7th, 5 to 7, like a one price for some apps, a beverage. I'm looking to arrange that, a private room, meeting with someone today. But stay tuned. That is still happening. I've had several people recently ask me about the meetup. Still happening. I'm working on it. And then finally, Julie, in Brooklyn, You got some tips to clip for the Brooklyn signing.
I do. You know, because I was in Brooklyn last week, as many people know, playing the role of Urban Nana, babysitting for my absolutely adorable granddaughter, Josephine. But I did take some time to meet with the folks at Powerhouse Arena, where we are having our book party launch. And that's going to be a big deal because we have quite a few satellite sisters are showing up for that, as well as the next gen is showing up. And we've got some brothers,
right.
A couple of random spouses.
Possible son. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, this is the mother load. So we had some work just on the logistics, like where are all these people going to sit? Right. So we were working on that, but I was also trying to think, like, if I was going to the event in Brooklyn, at the Powerhouse Arena, how would I do that? Okay. I mean, so let's say first of all, it's not hard to get to, Lynn. You can drive there. There's parking garages that are very close to the Powerhouse Arena. So that you don't have to worry about that. You can take the subway. That's what Urban Nana does. I got off at High Street and just walked down the hill. Could not be easier. But then, you know, our event is at 7 p.m. on Friday, October 30th. So I thought, well, you might want to come with your girlfriends or your spouse or your partner or whatever, you know? And so maybe you want to get something to eat. Well, if you're in the mood for a pumpkin spice latte, right across the street, there's a big Starbucks. So you can just come, have a little latte, and then come hear the reading. But let's say you want to do it bigger. Leanne, you can go at the high end, like one of the most beautiful restaurants in the whole world, the River Cafe. Do you know where that is?
Now it's very pricey. I do know where it is. I've never been there.
But it has the most spectacular views of the Manhattan skyline from Brooklyn. So, but let's say you don't want to spend all that money. Well, you know, you can go to the Brooklyn Bridge Park for free and you can stand there with your satellite sisters and have a spectacular picture taken of yourself. Of course, it will be too late to enter into the contest, but you will have that picture. Okay. But let's say you and your satellite sisters, you've eaten a sandwich or whatever. You just want maybe something a little sweet, like a cookie or a cupcake. Adorable place right across the street from Powerhouse Arena called One Girl Cookies. Very cutely and very sort of this little chic place where you can have, they had delicious cookies and cupcakes and wine. I don't usually put those two together, but apparently a lot of people do. So that looked like a good place. But, you know, every time I go to New York, I love to have pizza because I think New York pizza tastes so good. There's also right down the street. It couldn't be more than half a block, Front Street Pizzeria. Okay. Go and get yourself a slice before the big event. How about that? And then I saw a place that I was like, this had Sister Sheila's name all over it. It's called Foragers Market. You know how she like goes out and forages for food? This is like one of these farm to table, you know, totally delicious looking, you know, market where they have a big hot table and you can like get yourself a plate of something and then sit there or sit in their outside cafe place and eat it. So that looked really good too. And then there was just a lovely place called the Atrium, again, right down the street from the Powerhouse Arena, which is more sort of cafe style, French American. That looked like a solid place to go if you wanted to eat dinner. So all I'm saying is within steps of the Powerhouse Arena, there's all different kinds of price points, but all different kinds of food, beverages. And so you can really make a night of it. And I think if it's, you can have a lot of fun there, you know, just walking around. It's a really, have you ever been to this area of Brooklyn, Leon?
No. Not in a really long time. Not since it's become, you know, Brooklyn with the capital B. No.
No, it's, you're going to love it. It's very charming. Lots of cute little stores and shops and restaurants. So there's lots to do down there. So, you know, you could really make this a whole evening. Go get yourself something to eat and then come hear the Satellite Sisters.
All right. So. We will have all of the websites. Julie just mentioned a bunch of places. We have all the links and we're going to put that up at satellitesisters.com for those of you coming to the Brooklyn event. Oh, that Foragers does look good. I'm looking at their website.
Yes.
Now. It looks excellent. Good choice, Julie. Good choice. All right. So we have a lot happening. I just encourage people to keep up with us at the Facebook page and also at satellitesisters.com. That's the best place to find information. We have a new events calendar. So far, I can't post the December events, but we're going to figure that out this week. It's only letting me post 2 months at a time. But I promise you, we are going to be in Dallas in December, and then everything else is already up on the website. All right. Fantastic. Well, yesterday, Julie, one of the reasons we didn't have the Tuesday show on Tuesday, we're having it on Wednesday, is that I was invited to the West Coast premiere of He Named Me Malala, which is the new documentary about Malala Yousafzai. You know her. She's the Pakistani schoolgirl who stood up against the Taliban and went to school, even though they said girls couldn't go to school. She was shot by the Taliban, flown to London, where she's recovered and is now going to school there, but has continued her campaign to promote education for girls throughout the world. And this was a super exciting event because, as if that documentary doesn't sound like heartwarming enough, like it makes you cry just thinking about it, I was there with 6,000 Los Angeles schoolgirls. They put together this event with a group that's called Girls Build LA. And they invited 6,000 middle and high school girls from all over Los Angeles. They bussed them all in. They were all in their school uniforms or whatever they wore to school that day. And I watched the documentary with 6,000 girls. So,
Big of a theater was this?
It was huge. It was the same theater where they had the Emmys the other night. It's the Microsoft Theater downtown. And so it was just really fantastic to hear and see their reaction. They were so excited to be there. They seemed to already have some knowledge of Malala and the work she was doing. And then the director is Davis Guggenheim, who, you know, won the Academy Award for An Inconvenient Truth. He's a very accomplished documentary director. So he came out and spoke to the girls ahead of time. And he said, you know, normally I like to think of my audience before I make a documentary. I like to picture who am I making this for, like a very specific person. And he said, you know, when I made this documentary about Malala, I was thinking of you, high school girls in America, because, you know, I think there's so much you can learn from Malala's story and she's so inspiring and it will be eye-opening for you to see what she's gone through for her education and hopefully inspire you. But he said it in a way that was really genuine. So it wasn't lectury or preachy. And then the girls cheered. They cheered throughout the entire documentary. They did the wave beforehand. They got up in their seats. They were dancing. And then there were just some really dramatic parts of the story. And they totally got it. They were completely into it. He wove together. We went, you got her whole life story. But the way he wove it together, of course, is the art of documentarians. And so you really got the sense of a couple of things. The first really important relationship that comes through in the film is the relationship between Malala and her father. And I did not know a lot about her father or her family, there is some amazing footage of him. He was a very vocal, outspoken critic of the Taliban, and he's a teacher. He started a school himself. He's an advocate for education long before he had children, and he has his own kind of dramatic personal life story, and that's told in the film. You get the story of her mother in the film, and there's a great contrast between Malala and her mother, and the, you know, separated by the gulf of education because her mother only recently learned to read. Like most of the women in Pakistan, she was illiterate. But this bond between Malala and her father is very deep, it's very real, and it's very strong. And I know there have been people that criticize Malala, that she's just her father's mouthpiece, but that is completely dispelled in this documentary. You see footage of Malala from 11, from 12, from 13, talking before she was shot, before the world knew her name, talking about speaking out against the Taliban and talking about education, that she's no one's mouthpiece, for sure. She has her own mind and she uses it. So that's extraordinary. The other story they're able to tell in a really interesting way is just the story of the Taliban over the course of Malala's lifetime. Locking down everything in Pakistan. Like, they started by kind of the currying favor with the women, speaking to them directly, and then taking away all of their rights. And you really get a sense of that from the footage and the audio they use. And then the other thing you get the sense of is just, you know, that this is an extraordinary problem across the world, that girls are not educated. And I know the First Lady's been out talking about this week. You're going to talk about it. And 62 million girls across the globe do not, 62 million girls across the globe do not have access to education. And so that is clear, that you have, you know, you have pictures of her meeting with Syrian refugees and meeting with school girls in Kenya, that this is a very real problem. And that she's one of the few voices really speaking out for it. At least she was. Now, I think a lot of people are on the bandwagon, but that's an incredible story. And then the other story they tell, which I had not seen a lot of, was her recovery from getting shot. You know,
she seemed, it was near death, right?
She seemed to bounce back kind of quickly in our minds, but she had to work. I mean, it was really touch and go. They did not think she was going to come back. She still has a lot of issues, but they show the footage and talk to her doctors and nurses, and that's very dramatic. And then you just see her as this normal 17-year-old girl fighting with her brothers and playing games with her family. And
but do you think it was it's the relationship that she had with her father that just enabled her to be so brave and so strong in that moment?
Yes. Yeah. And you see that. See that. And the father's very open and honest too. So you see that relationship. It's a wonderful movie, for like dads and daughters to go to. It's a great movie for anyone. You will find it fascinating, but the father-daughter story is very deep and very real and really inspiring and, you know, not perfect. There's doubts on both sides about, is this what we should be doing? Is this the right thing? Did I do the right thing by telling her to go to school? Did I do this? So, but it's a pretty amazing story and it's really well told. And because they couldn't really shoot in her hometown at all, there's also a wonderful use of animation to illustrate some of the stories, her background that she's telling. And it's just a beautifully animated portions of the film. So,
that sounds so importantly. And again, you think 2015, you know, all girls have access.
Right.
No, not so much, you know, and also the Taliban is making a resurgence, you know, that they're recapturing areas in, whole regions in Afghanistan, you know, and again, you can just imagine that girls that did have access to education are, you know, they're going to be denied that access to education. So
yeah,
very important to see.
Definitely worth going to. I know Liz was telling me that in a year from now, it will be on National Geographic. They'll be releasing it worldwide. But, you know, there will be a theatrical release. It's a really wonderful film, really well done. And you really do learn a lot, even if you think you know her story. And you don't quite. And just, you know, again, that repressive government, like when you see it in action, when you see it like literally clamping down and clamping down tighter, 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 it's dramatic. It's very dramatic. So,
I know. Well, you know, it fits so nicely into a story that I wanted to talk about because I was reading about it. I would say it's the First Lady's death story, but Michelle Obama this week was participating in the Let Girls Learn campaign. This is a worldwide organization that is really trying to promote girls' education in countries like in Japan and Cambodia and you know, all over the world. So, you know, and she gave a very impassioned speech, and that's what caught my eye, where, you know, she said she was, again, speaking to mainly an American audience of girls, but she was saying to them in a very direct way, like, do not be shy from being the smartest kid. You know, I think girls, even if they are smart, you know, sometimes they don't want to show that. And, you know, Michelle Obama was saying, do not let, you know, never mind what boys think, that you should be able to compete with boys. You should feel comfortable beating boys, you know, and in math and, you know, and what in history or whatever the topic is. And she, you know, she said she would not be where she was today if she, you know, if she worried about what boys thought of her, you know, that, you know, she obviously is a very accomplished attorney, you know, and now she's First Lady. But, you know, she said she, you know, if she really worried about that, you know, she said she would not be where she is today. And she said she acknowledged that, you know, oh, it's very easy when you're an adult not to worry about those things. But like when you are, you know, a preteen or a teenager, those things are much more important. They have a different priority. And it's very hard for girls to have the confidence to be the smartest in the room. So I think that's a good campaign. And again, creating access to education or keeping girls in school, Leanne. You know, sometimes, you know, back when I lived in Bangkok, Thailand, you know, the American Women's Club there worked on a project where we were providing, like, you know, money for uniforms and, you know, and pencils and pens
right.
that were going to be used in, like, the rural Thailand. Because if the girls didn't have the uniforms or the school supplies, then they couldn't stay in schools. And you know, in a lot of cases, their families did not have the money to pay for those uniforms. So simply by giving them, you know, uniforms and pens and pencils and paper, these girls could stay in school for another year. And that can make all the difference in terms of the kinds of life choices that they can make or have opportunities. So
yeah, there are a million barriers for girls, you know, if something would, you know, as simple as, you know, supplies when they're on their menstrual cycle. If they don't have that, they end up having to stay home for that whole week of school and they just end up dropping out because they end up missing too much school. So I had a million barriers to entry. Well, that's why it was impressive to see all these young girls there. They were you know, advocating that they go out, identify a problem in their community. That's why it was called Girls Build LA, and then do something about it. Of course, I'm thinking, oh, these poor teenage girls, they have so much going on. But then you see what Malala went through, you're like, I'm on it. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting, Julie, we're running this whole special series of interviews called Satellite Sisters, You're the Best Interviews. Starts this week. We'll post with Nora Ephron tomorrow. And one of the people that we spoke to in the past was Dr. Wangari Maathai, who's the Nobel laureate from Africa. Mm-hmm. And she planted trees. And I just re-listened to that interview.
Right.
And she was like the first woman in all of Central Africa to get a PhD. She absolutely says, education is absolutely what separated my life. You know, most of the girls in her country, in her village, did not go to school, but her father had her go to school, and that absolutely made the difference. It was fascinating to listen to that interview again in light of, you know, seeing this movie and hearing the First Lady on several occasions this week, and seeing that movement for educating girls globally. It's just, it just, there's no way to underscore how important it is for these girls to get an education. So I liked listening to that interview again.
All right.
Is it, what are we doing now? Is it the shit lean
okay,
in?
Well, okay. That, I know. No, you're not done. Stay with me, Leah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, we were going to turn and talk about, because the other big news coming out today is Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In organization and the McKinsey, a global consulting company, has just released a major study, largest study of its kind. It's women in the workplace. They interviewed and surveyed 118 different companies, and they talked to and surveyed 30,000 employees. So this to really get, you know, a comprehensive picture of where women are in the workplace. Okay, so here's the headline, Leanne, according to Sheryl Sandberg. There's only really one thing you need to write down. 100 years. Okay, that's what Sheryl Sandberg says. It's going to take 100 more years to get gender equality in the C-suite. That would be at the chief executive level. 100 more years. She writes that we are going to have time. This is what Sheryl Sandberg wrote. She said, we're going to have time to go up in space, like send someone to space that they can soar past Mars. They can travel all the way to Pluto and then return to Earth and then do that for 10 more times before... before half of the C-suite offices will be occupied by women. So we have a lot of time in order to do it. Isn't that is despite some sort of modest improvement that they saw on the horizon in 2012, women remain unbelievably, okay, that's my word, not Sheryl Sandberg's word, underrepresented in the executive suites. And that in order to make that up, 100 more years. So,
So they're tossing us the $10 bill like it matters, but it really doesn't. It's not funny. It's sad. It's a whole sea change. So many pieces have to fall in place for that number to shrink. But to actually see it in print, I got an email from the Lean In group today, you know, signed up for their emails. Yes. So I got the whole study. And yeah, that is quite a number, 100 years, which, you know, first of all, it's just exhausting to think about that, isn't it? It's exhausting. Well, you know, some of the key findings of this McKinsey study, this Lean In McKinsey study, include this, that there is a leadership ambition gap, that at every stage, women seem less eager than men to become a top executive, and they tend to cite stress and pressure as a top issue. And it's not all rooted over balancing work and family, but that's a big portion of it. Another reason for this big gap, it is an uneven playing field. Okay. Don't kid yourself.
Yes. Yeah, so the women perceive this as an uneven playing field. Exactly. They think it is going to be at least twice as hard to make it or to advance in the organization. That's their sort of operating belief as they work in this company. So that's
another key finding was that employee programs are abundant, but participation is low. And that's what I mean. That's a corporate change. That there are a lot of companies that offer flexibility and career development programs, but men and women don't use them because they think, like, the extended family leave, for instance, is going to hurt their position at work. 90% of women believe that.
Interesting.
That's a big number.
So even if that isn't the case, if that's the perception of 90% of the people that work in that organization, that's where perception is reality.
Right.
So that you are, in fact, going to be hurt if you you take this extended family leave, you know, because nobody does that, you know, and that's, you know, and you think, well, the companies are trying to provide more family friendly programs and things, but it must be very frustrating if nobody's using them.
And then if no one uses them, then they stop offering them. So we're calling on you millennials to just take that extended family leave, please. Somebody take it, you know, somebody take it. Now that doesn't mean it's paid leave. So there's a difference there too. But, you know, they will extend you family leave. It doesn't mean you're paid for it. There's still inequality at home. Julie, yes. Even in a household where both partners are working, 41% of women report doing more childcare and 30% report doing more chores. So, and then this one caught my eye about men and women having very different networks. So men have predominantly male networks at work, while women have mostly female or mixed networks. So you can see the problems, given that men are more likely to hold senior leadership positions, women may end up with less access to senior level sponsorship. That's pretty basic, isn't it?
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah. I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. Butcher Box gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils. I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer. And it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria algae body oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria collagen body oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz, a youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
You know, and it's that was so like disappointing to me because, you know, we've been talking about mentors. You know, I went to business school, I believe 100 years ago as well. And that's all we were talking about. We want mentorships and everybody. This is like we have been talking about this stuff for so long. And that's what's really stressful about this. But Sheryl Sandberg said, you know, well, why should we care? What difference does it make if they're women, you know, if we have gender equality at the executive level? Well, according to Sheryl, she says it does make a big difference because we know that diversity on work teams, that the more diverse a team is, the better it will perform. So if women get stuck, America gets stuck. That we are not producing the best teams available because we're limiting the access of women, in this case, women, to those teams. So, and they, you know, she's also said that, of course, you know, the whole bossy label, you know, that girls, you know, get conditioned very early on, like not to be too bossy, you know, but and that they have to really navigate some kind of tightrope of being, you know, where you want to be liked in your organization and you want to be, or do you want to be respected? Now you can talk to a lot of guys and they're like, I don't care if people like me. Right. I just want people to respect me.
And they literally don't care. They truly don't care if people like them.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think for a lot of women, that is a much, much harder, you know, sort of thing to operate that way so that they want that sense of being liked, you know? So I don't know, Leigh, and it was 100 years. So, the recommendation is, we absolutely need to measure the progress. You have to establish, you know, benchmarks and goals. And if you're not really tracking diversity, if you're just putting in all these family-friendly programs that no one's using, well, that's not enough. And obviously, it's not doing the trick. So, and that they also said that you need to be very transparent. And there needs to be a lot more training in terms of, you know, creating opportunities or trying to figure out what are, you know, what are this, you know, what are like the informal cues that go on that sort of create the additional stress for women that men are not perceiving. So, and that just as you were saying that women need more access to senior managers because they're not getting that.
But if I think that sense that your mentor, if you're a woman, has to be a woman is false. You know, you can find a male mentor. Liz has always said it was always men that believed in her, and that's how she got there. As long as you find someone that believes in you. But I guess it can be harder. It's a little bit harder. A little bit harder to maybe approach a man. I don't know.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens to this, because I think previously, you know, maybe people thought, oh, well, you know, that happens in this particular industry or this type of company, but it doesn't. You know, it's not as comprehensive. This report was so comprehensive, you know, and it should really be a wake up call for all organizations, you know, in all fields, because they're just not doing the job. Even if they thought they were doing the job, that the results aren't there. And so they have to be a lot more results oriented in terms of, you know, trying to make this happen.
Right. Well, that is one of the last key findings, is that gender diversity is not widely believed to be a priority. So even though CEOs might say, oh, yeah, we're highly committed, less than half employees believe that gender diversity is a top priority, and only a third view it as a top priority for their direct manager. So it is something you kind of have to think about all the time. And not just once or twice a year, you know, when you sponsor the luncheon for the women in your office. So it takes a full commitment from, you know, the whole company, you know, everyone from the bottom to the top. Well, Julie, there was an article in the New York Times that talking about networks that caught my eye this weekend. In the business section, because a couple of weeks ago we were talking about baby boomers, those over 50, talking to millennial recruiters and how difficult that can be, that you people who are job hunting in their 50s don't feel like they're connecting on these, you know, Skype interviews or phone calls or, you know, interactive Q&As with their millennial recruiters. So that was one issue. But so this is sort of a related issue. The New York Times reporting that here's the problem if you're in your 50s. Here's a tip.
There are a lot of problems when you're in your 50s. Yeah.
You're in your 50s and job hunting. Yeah. Basically, your network is too old. They said, your network has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller and tends, you know, not to be people on the move, moving up. So it's natural that you connect with fewer people as you get older because you realize I'm tired of people.
I'm not talking to that group.
I'm so tired of going out for drinks after work. So here's the tip that the New York Times had. They said, if you want to have a bigger network in your 50s, start in your 40s, Julie. So for those of you in your 50s, it's too late. But if you're in your 40s, remember, you might need people in 10 years to help you find a job. So they said, you know, take the opportunity to get to know the younger people in your office. Keep your technical skills up to date. Do not get far behind on your technical skills and engage in conversations about technical skills in the workplace. But that's it. So if you're in your 50s, I'm sorry, I have bad news. I can't help you. But if you're in your 40s, keep going to those drinks after work. All right. Keep doing it, people. Keep doing it.
Well, that's something. I mean, it's good to know that, you know, because I think you do get tired of doing all of that stuff. And you wonder, is this really worth it? Or, you know, I mean, is this the best use of my time? I could be home on my couch, you know.
Or with my kids' soccer team or something. Yes, you know, you have other obligations when you're in your 40s sometimes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, and so it's all over in your 50s.
It's just, you know, you should've, woulda, coulda.
Well, okay. I mean, at least they're being honest, right?
Right.
At least, that's what I mean. Rather than pretending that if you just keep like spinning around and you know talking to the same two people that you're, you know, that's effective networking, right?
The two other disgruntled employees in their 50s
that are hanging out at Starbucks together.
Oh. Okay. All right. Are we meditating now?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you, it's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled PROSE, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS. Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leanne, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the frame bridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and FrameBridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but FrameBridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or see a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's FrameBridge.com. Thanks, FrameBridge.
So we have to like change gears, because because that's been some pretty heavy and in some ways very depressing news that we're bringing to this podcast. So now we need to like cleanse our minds, literally. And I saw this article. This is a study that was done by Florida State University. It was reported in the Journal of Mindfulness, and it was indeed also reported in the Wall Street Journal. It was about the meditative power of dishwashing. Yes, you heard it, Leon, dishwashing. That they really, you know, depending on how you approach dishwashing, that it can have some very positive psychological effects, which just when I saw the headlines, I started to laugh, because we grew up in a large family of eight, and all the girls, I mean, we had like the Taliban at our house, wasn't it, Leanne? The girls. We didn't call it that. We didn't know it was the Taliban, but that they would be our brothers and our father, you know, right? And the girls, we always had to do the dishes, okay? And there was no such thing in a family of eight of like a small meal. Even if we didn't get a lot of food on the plates at any time, it still created a lot of dishes.
Yes.
So we have done just tons of dishes, right?
Yeah, and continue to do tons of dishes, right?
Yes, I do think it's what has bonded us in some ways. We always said this about Satellite Sisters, that we really forged our relationship and our friendship because we were stuck in the kitchen so much and we had to entertain each other. You know, that was true.
If we had gotten to sit on the couch like our brothers and watch the football game or whatever after dinner, who knows what we'd be doing now?
That's right. Okay, so that's the backdrop for when I heard about this study. So the study was, they had groups of students, and they encouraged one group to just hang around on the couch, but the other group was encouraged to, when they were doing dishes, to really explore the dishwashing process, meaning that they were to focus on the sensory part of the dishwashing, that they were to smell the Dawn dishwashing liquid. They were to feel the hot, soapy water. They were to notice the round shapes of the dishes, okay? They were supposed to do this when they were washing the dishes, to really get, you know, to that. That was their focus, not like, oh my gosh, we got like 18 pots and pans.
Right. Oh, mashed potatoes. But, yeah. Just, hated washing those big things of mashed potatoes.
They were tough, Lee. They were tough. But they did the study and they found that students really who focused on the sort of sensory part of dishwashing reported a reduction in nervousness, and that in fact they felt an increase in their mental inspiration, that it created a sort of a mood booster, you know, and they felt they left, you know, after washing dishes feeling very satisfied.
Oh, what,
so
do you know?
Can do this? I mean, to just to focus on that the warm soapy water, the, you know, the shape of the bowls and glasses in your hands. What do you think?
You know, every time my sons wash the dishes, Brooks actually has a gag reaction. Literally still gagging after 20 years.
What do you mean gagging?
He goes, he is like a gag. He is one of those gag reflex things.
Like when he sees dirty dishes?
Yeah, he just can't deal. I force him to deal. He is forced to deal. But I don't think he's reached the point where it's going to be meditative yet. I have to say, if it's not an overwhelming amount, I don't mind doing the dishes. I do like water. I've never thought of it as meditative, but... I'll have to rethink that. I'll have to rethink it.
Just try it. See how you feel about it. I mean, I'm gonna try it. No, I'm not, because I don't like to do the dishes. I already did too much. I make my husband do the dishes. But occasionally, I'll try it. Just see if you find any kind of difference in your mood or your nervousness or your level of inspiration.
Oh, God. The inspiration, I'm not so sure about. But
don't you come up with ideas when you're washing dishes?
Maybe a little bit more. Uh-huh. Folding laundry or walking the dog. Those are the better things for me. I don't know,
okay.
But I'll have to. Maybe I'll just have to focus in on it. Maybe I'm a font of ideas. I just focused in on it. Okay. All right, Julie. We had some good posts on the Facebook page today, so we want to congratulate Jonelle's daughter. She finished the Appalachian Trail.
How about that?
Can you believe that?
That's quite rigorous, Liam.
Okay.
Her
daughter, I think her daughter's name is Marcella. Yes, that's her daughter's name. I'm looking at it. There's a wonderful picture of her on our Facebook group that she's at the top of Mount Katahdin, which I think I hiked once in summer camp, but I certainly didn't do it after 2000. Miles of hiking before it. But there are great photos, but that's really a good accomplishment. So I think we're going to try to get Marcella on the show. Jonelle will get in touch with you guys when she, takes a rest, has a shower. I happen to watch that.
I'm going to miss the pictures because she's been great about posting that. And we encourage other people who have, children or, you have someone in your family that's going for it like this. I mean, we'd like to know about that.
Yeah. I'd like to know about that. So we'll be in touch, but congratulations. That's a wonderful accomplishment. We've all had fun, I think, following along. And then this weekend on the show, Julie, you're doing some Brooklyn observations and you asked a question. Mm-hmm. How much do tattoos cost? Because you've noticed a lot of people in Brooklyn have tattoos. So we got a response from our resident body modifier on the Satellite Sisters Facebook page. You've seen Cassidy post before. She has a lot of tattoos. She wrote that she has about $35,000 worth of work on herself. And then she also does tattoos and piercings. So she said, depending upon the artist's skill set and where they're working on your body, those hourly charges could be up to $250 an hour. So tattoos can be expensive. I know you were wondering, how do people afford all these tattoos? But here's what Cassidy wrote. She said people can get really addicted to self-decoration. And she has some clients that come in every few months and others that come in for their first and return every few weeks before. So, and she describes her body as this. Body mods have enabled people to express themselves, to document special times, people's places in their lives. And I call our body our storyboard. And I am a prime example of that, as I can show you the different times of my life through my art. Body modification is not for everyone, but living lives for ourselves is. That's a good motto, Cassidy.
I totally agree with that. And I know some other people posted pictures of some of their tattoos. Yeah.
Peggy's sea turtle from Hawaii in the 70s. Yeah, I'm tempted pretty much. I'm just a scaredy cat. I'm scared. That's the same reason I don't get Botox or plastic surgery or LASIK. I just think the practitioner will sneeze. They're in the middle of the procedure, like whatever it is. So there you go. That's, yeah, I'm some, quite a few people in our group have tattoos, but that is, they can be pretty expensive, but
well,
they tell a story.
Now thank you for answering the question. I just had no idea, you know, so, and I wasn't making a judgment about tattoos.
No, you were asking,
I was more curious because people have tattoos, you know, and what's the story with them? So thanks for letting us know.
Thanks, Cassidy. Well, way to go. Way to clear that up. Camel Trails is Cassidy's business. If you're interested, she's in Canada. So hello, Canada. All right. What else is happening? What are you doing this week, Joel? Anything?
No, Leon, you ask me that every week and I never have a good answer. Well, I know what I'm going to be doing. I am going to be monitoring our Instagram account and Facebook account, looking at all the wonderful pictures of Satellite Sisters that are up there. You know, that's what I'm going to be doing, Leon. How about you?
Well, I've got to finish up Madam Secretary. I realized I had seen every episode and I was delighted to find out there's a couple more episodes I haven't seen. So before we start season two debuts on Sunday night. So before we start our recap next week, it's on Netflix. I'm going to catch up in the last couple. And I'm excited about that. And then we'll be good to go next week. So that's got that going on. And then on Friday night, I am back at Ladies Night Out in support of the cancer support community here in Pasadena. It's a wonderful organization that provides all kinds of services for cancer patients and their families. Everything from yoga to therapy to grief counseling, to helping you navigate the social work system. All the services they provide are absolutely free to anyone with a cancer diagnosis or their family. And so they do this great fundraiser. And if you haven't heard me talk about it before, it's the wackiest fundraiser because it is all women. Okay.
And it's just, didn't you have a belly dancer show up one time and you didn't know you were having a belly dancer or a male stripper? This is where you had the male stripper.
It was a belly dancer, but she was actually a stripper. She was supposed to be like, teach us all to belly dance. And then she took all her clothes off. So that happened. Ooh. So that happened.
Yeah.
So like tassels and all, I mean, so everybody tells a story, Julie, and her body told a story. So yeah, it's a crazy event, but it's 250 women and it's a ton of fun. There's a silent auction. There's a live auction. There's a drawing for all kinds of things. And so I am coming back as the auctioneer this year. So I will be doing the live auction again. So I got to prepare for that. That is a lot of stress doing a live auction. It's not like I'm a professional.
You got to keep going, Leon. And I know you got to really think on your feet and talk fast. Okay.
Yeah. And you have to actually like see everything and talk and even just where is the bid, keeping a lot of things straight. So I'm going to be preparing for that all week because that is Friday night. So looking forward to it. It's always a good event. But if you're looking for a wacky fundraising idea, just try having one with all women because you know what? Their husbands don't want to come anyway. So they're tired at the end of the week. They're happy. It's just a lot of fun. And then there's a wacky band, an 80s dance band, and then we all dance at the end. It's really a nutty night. But that's what I'll be doing this week, Ladies Night Out here in Pasadena. All right, Jewel. Wow. We filled up almost 50 minutes.
It's always amazing on Tuesday. It's just like the loaves and the fishes, Leon. It's always a miracle on Tuesday, isn't it?
Here it is, our last show of September. I want to remind you that those Satellite Sisters encore interviews are going to be posted starting tomorrow. Nora Ephron is our first special interview, and it is a special interview, I promise you. It's just wonderful to hear her voice and to hear her point of view and to just hear from her again. So I hope that you share that interview on your Facebook page and on Twitter and with all your Satellite Sisters because I think it's pretty special. I was happy to be in on it. Happy to hear it again. All right, Joel, have a great day.
You too, Leanne.
And don't forget, call your Satellite Sister.